This is BDO in the Boardroom, a podcast by the BDO Center for Corporate Governance for the Board of Directors and those charged with governance. We're joined by your board peers and inspiring leaders to discuss the trending and timeless issues that are impacting today's boardroom agendas. Let's get started.
So welcome to BDO in the Boardroom. I'm Amy Rojic, leader of BDO's Center for Corporate Governance, and I'm being joined today by my colleague, Didier Lavian, principal with BDO's forensic practice, to discuss how boards should recognize and react to current changes in the current administration's directionality of enforcement by the Department of Justice, more specifically, the current temporary pause in the Foreign Corrupt Practices Act enforcement. Before we begin, however, let's give a little bit of background about Didier. Prior to joining BDO, he provided advisory forensic guidance for over 30 years to a wide global client base. In addition to his deep experience in anti-bribery and anti-corruption, Didier works with clients in a variety of capacities, leading companies through global investigations, compliance assessments, post-acquisition due diligence, and complex data analytics related to compliance, among many other advisory projects. And so, for some fun facts, Didier speaks three languages, French, Spanish, and English, and has lived in five countries and has conducted investigations in more than 30 countries. So Didier, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you so much, Amy. I'm flattered to be invited, so I appreciate that.
Well, we appreciate your knowledge you're about to impart. So here we go. We're going to dive right in. And maybe first, if you can provide the audience with a quick recap of what the recent U.S. presidential executive order regarding federal criminal enforcement is about, and what has changed regarding the Department of Justice's enforcement of the Foreign Corrupt Practices Act, or FCPA.
CPA, that's right. So I think it's big news, certainly in the circles of compliance and regulatory enforcement, but not everybody is well informed in terms of what this means. Basically, on February 10th of this year, the administration issued an executive order instructing the Attorney General of the Department of Justice, Pamela Bondi, to put a pause on all FCPA enforcement. And I'll qualify enforcement as actual enforcement. It does not put a pause on the actual applicability of the law. Over the years, the FCPA has been established in 1977 and has grown in terms of enforcement over the years, internationally and globally. And putting a pause on this is really the first time since 1977 that the Department of Justice has literally done anything to go anything but forward with regards to FCPA enforcement having to do with the bribery of foreign officials. So the pause is effectively going to take place for 180 days, as is prescribed by the executive order. But that doesn't really elaborate in terms of what the pause means. And perhaps at a later point, we can dig into the elements of what we think that pause means and what it'll impact as it relates to regulatory compliance at the corporate level.
Yeah, so maybe you can elaborate on what this is going to mean for the Department of Justice.
So the Department of Justice is basically redirect for 180 days. They're effectively saying we need to elaborate and provide guidance as to what the new directionality of the FCPA enforcement looks like. That means that Bondi and her team basically have to start putting together some guidance that interprets the executive order. She has 180 days to do this. The pause is for 180 days and instructs her to do kind of a redo of what the enforcement policy looks like. But she has the ability to extend that for another 180 days. So putting in the time frame, right, for up until August of this year, nothing has to change really, but it might if it's elaborated by the Attorney General. And then if she and her team isn't ready to elaborate, she can extend that pause for another 180 days, which brings it well into the early part of 2026. Several days before the issuance of the executive order, Attorney General Bondi issued 14 memos on DOJ priorities. One of those memos spoke directly about FCPA enforcement and effectively instructed the prosecutors within Maine Justice to redirect its enforcement of FCPA towards transnational criminal organizations, or TCOs, or in certain definitions, foreign terrorist organizations. There's been a lot of talk in the news about what that means. These are effectively cartels and the like, very large organizations that are operating illegally all over the world. She effectively took the mandate of enforcement of FCPA and the individuals associated with that enforcement and said, you guys now need to start focusing on TCOs and foreign terrorist organizations and start investigating and enforcing relative to those organizations, which has a lot of complexities to it. And we can dig into what those TCOs are and whether or not they've been implicated in the legal construct of what companies have had to obey to or abide by, and what it means from a practical standpoint, if anything, if that changes the way companies will guide their governance and their compliance to address not only the FCPA historically, but now this focus on TCOs in foreign terrorist organizations.
Got it. So, I mean, maybe we could get into some of the things that, you know, maybe companies should need to know about this, because yeah. I think, you know, there's always the concept of materiality and other things that companies may need to recognize when they're looking at the FCPA and other related aspects.
So whereas before the FCPA had specific guidance, and over the years, there's a lot of guidance that the DOJ issued as it related to compliance for the FCPA, you weren't allowed to effectively bribe or even consider or attempt to bribe a foreign public official. Now they're focusing on these transnational criminal organizations and effectively saying that any company and or individuals that provides material support to these organizations can be, one, investigated and effectively fined criminally, both the corporate entities, the individuals, and associated people within the corporate entity for having provided material support to these organizations. Now, what does that mean? You know, historically, FCPA enforcement has never, only in one case has there been an FCPA case where a criminal organization or a cartel or a terrorist organization has been part of a scheme, let's say, and they've bribed individuals and the payments were associated with a terrorist organization. And this happened in Syria. It was under war conditions. There were terrorist organizations that were operating in the country. The company was involved in extractive industries, and they effectively decided they're going to pay to allow their operations to be maintained in these areas, even though they knew that terrorist organizations were controlling it. That was providing material support. That element of material support, and I'm not a lawyer, I'm just, you know, my interpretation is, you know, was established back in the post 9/11 days when terrorist organizations were financing individuals and organizations were financing other terrorist organizations. And the government said, well, basically any form of support, whether you provide payment, whether you work with them, whether you have a company with them, whether you have facilitation payments with them, or you pay them to allow your properties to exist safely or provide protection, all of those fall under material support. And so in this particular context, the bar is effectively raised. It's no longer that companies have to be careful about bribing public officials. They now have to make sure that they are not providing any form of material support in their operations around the world. Now, a little bit less relevant maybe in the U.S., although subject to interpretation with drug cartels, right? But this is probably most relevant in countries where cartels and terrorist organizations operate. So without inherently creating a bias, but in Latin America, in Mexico, a lot of cartels are operating. We know this. We see this in the news. A lot of cartels operating in territories. And it is virtually impossible for companies not to, at one point or another, operate within the territories of those cartels. And so that means they have touch points somewhere along the line. Somebody within the organization has a touch point. Now, whether or not that's existed in the past or not, my guess is it has. Has it been a priority for people or companies to worry about it in the context of today's regulation and DOJ enforcement? No, historically they haven't. There's a safety issue always concerned because when you're operating in a cartel environment, you have to make sure that your people are safe. And so all of those elements were always built into the compliance construct, but now it's going to be potentially investigated by the Department of Justice. And the Department of Justice is very intent on making sure that any company that's associated, whether intentionally or not, is properly investigated. Perhaps they might even ask for collaboration from corporate entities to say, hey, listen, you know, we know you're operating in this environment. We need help to figure out where the touch points are. And so we're going to either help you investigate or we're going to investigate. And there might be some collaboration with Department of Justice and these corporate entities. The same thing will be true actually for Africa, where there's a ton of terrorist and criminal organizations that are operating all over territories in Africa that you cannot control. And the companies are forced to live with by virtue of the fact that they're operating in these environments.
All right. So let's maybe bring this with that background, maybe bring this front and center to a board. So should the board of directors' oversight of ethical behavior and governance change to adapt to these changes that you've mentioned? And if so, how?
So actually, even before that, I guess the predicate for the change in enforcement, since the DOJ is reviewing the guidelines, they're not initiating new FCPA investigations. So a lot of companies and boards will say, well, hold on, now the DOJ is not investigating this new investigations. Does that mean I should kind of, you know, let off the gas pedal on the compliance and on the ethics and compliance? I'll put ethics in there on the ethics and compliance program and maybe relax a little bit. They're actually, even Justice is actually reviewing existing cases to see if they're going to pause the actual investigation that's going on in Maine Justice with these companies. So there's a lot of signal that says, hey, you know, the enforcement's not going to be there, or it's not going to be as heavy as it used to be, quite intrusive and expensive for companies to respond to the DOJ. In this particular case, I will say that absolutely not. The board needs to stay steady with its commitment to the company's compliance program on all the levels that we know compliance programs should operate, right? You got to make sure that the tone at the top is still the same. There might be an elaboration from the board's perspective or maybe from management as to what the new regulation means, and you might be training some people around there and certainly maybe conveying some messaging around that, but that's very nuanced and you have to be careful in terms of how you have to do. But the board should not change any of its stance as it relates to corporate governance. It certainly will not change its obligation towards the governance obligations of the organization. There are a couple things that probably should be considered and the board should be asking management if they're addressing, right? One is, given that there's a focus on cartels and criminal organizations and terrorist organizations, you might want to have the company kind of look again at its third-party risk management program and construct in total, because there's some nuances around how these cartels manifest themselves within the organization, either indirectly through other organizations that the company is interacting with or contracting with. And we all know that cartels, like given cartels in this example, they're ingrained in the local community at the operational level. They're also ingrained in government. Now, the FCPA used to say, well, hold on, you can't bribe government officials. But if you think about it, if a cartel is ingrained in the local government and the government official is now collaborating with a cartel because he or she doesn't have a choice from a safety perspective, from a territorial perspective, from whatever influence perspective there might be, is it possible that your company is accidentally engaging with third parties that might be associated with these cartels or these terrorist organizations? So a review of the third-party risk management system is definitely one of the first things that probably should be done. And by the way, the Department of Justice named 8 organizations and cartels as part of this new push for focusing on TCOs and terrorist organizations. Those cartels have always been in the blocked list of entities and or individuals or subset of that companies should have included in their trade compliance, in their KYC, know your customer, and their client onboarding. All of that should have been previously incorporated into the company's kind of third-party risk management and onboarding process. That probably should just be verified, because now the stakes are higher, let's just say, and then the nuances of stakes and whether or not you are materially supporting are higher. So definitely look at that. You know, the board is going to be beholden to all of the compliance obligations that it historically has. That's not going to change. The nuances are going to be much greater, and part of that needs to be addressed by properly assessing the risk. And so the last thing that I would say is I think the board should consider going to management and saying, when's the last time you did a proper risk assessment? Should you do a reassessment in light of some of these elements that are very much nuanced now? And what are the elements of that risk assessment that need to be particularly honed towards now the new risk that Department of Justice is going to be looking into?
Right. Now, that's very, very helpful. So I think some of the things that we were talking about before we actually started our podcast recording were some of the other maybe steps that board should be considering in terms of reacting to this new U.S. strategy. So maybe you can give us some maybe higher points from a governance perspective on what the boards should continue or not continue to do.
Yep. So I can guarantee you that tone at the top is probably the most important thing that needs to be conveyed and reconveyed under the current directive by the Department of Justice. I will say, you know, Department of Justice, even though they're changing their priorities, they're refocusing on these organizations, they will take note of directionality of the company and the board and whether or not they're really trying their best to maintain that level of governance and compliance no matter what, right? Because if they're being investigated, if the Department of Justice decides to investigate a corporate entity or maybe individuals associated with the entity, they're going to look in the same way that they have historically on all of these issues. Is the board sending the right message to management? And is management sending the right message to middle management? And is that tone consistent in terms of we will not tolerate this? This is an issue that's highly relevant from a corporate compliance and ethical standpoint. And so we, as the board, should reiterate this to our constituents within the company and the other stakeholders, which we can go into, to make sure that that tone is maintained and perhaps refreshed within the context of this new focus. The second thing is, you know, the risk assessment, I think, has to be very bespoke. I think a lot of lawyers will tell you, well, you need to risk assess and look at the compliance program. I'll say operationally, there's probably some greater level of nuance that maybe the board needs to make sure is implicated in whatever new risk assessment is undertaken by a company. And they need to have the right, let's just say, it's not just a legal and a compliance element, there's an operational component to it. And sometimes the board is very much removed from the operational specificity of the company and where they operate, how their operations can be impacted by regional risks. And in this case, it's cartels and perhaps terrorist organization. So the board needs to be very, I think, clear in terms of what it expects the risk assessment that the company undertakes should encompass. And then the last thing is, you know, remember that there's a practical element to this. It's what territories are you operating in? I think it's a relatively straightforward exercise for a company to understand geographically where they're operating and where there's an overlap of cartel and terrorist activity risk in those areas. You can go back to the case law on the FCPA case in Syria. You say, well, it's in Syria, so obviously there was high risk. You can go to kind of the same examples of companies operating in Latin America where there's a lot of cartel activity. That should tell you that geographically, you should probably focus some of your attention on that, because I can guarantee you that that's what Maine Justice is going to do as well, right? They're going to look in the territories where there's the highest risk of interaction with these organizations and perhaps the most challenge in terms of compliance.
Now, that's very helpful. So maybe we kind of switch gears to what happens when, you know, the board becomes aware of either a potential threat or pressure being put on the company to pay a bribe, and that occurs in a foreign country where they have operations. What happens in that case?
So the likelihood that the board gets informed of this, I will say from history and my experience, it's not low, it's pretty low, but it's not the lowest. Chances are, if it gets to the board, that means that somebody's escalated the issue appropriately through maybe perhaps a whistleblower mechanism. And we all know that in today's environment, certainly within the United States, there's all sorts of avenues where whistleblowers can actually escalate the issue. In many instances, those allegations are actually raised to justice and or the SEC directly. And so there's notification from either the SEC or the DOJ that there's an impending investigation or that the company and the board should respond to these allegations. The second thing is what's very important is make sure that in responding to an allegation that a proper investigation is undertaken. It doesn't necessitate, but it usually entails independent board members to manage the process of that investigation so that there's no confluence and or influence from board members that might be implicated or associated with management that might, let's say, impact the appearance of independence. So you want to make sure that you have an independent committee that is well-informed and separate from the board in general to lead that investigation. Outside counsel, you can start with inside counsel because privilege is absolutely necessary. I've talked to enough attorneys, both outside of main justice and private practice, to say, make sure that if any of these issues pop up and there's a suspicion of a link to a terrorist organization or a cartel, please engage outside counsel. It allows you to maintain the flow of information and the access of that information, which is very sensitive and strategic in terms of how you deal with it. So make sure you have outside counsel or general counsel involved. And then make sure you have the appropriate level of resources without limiting scope to do a proper investigation. There's nothing worse from an enforcement standpoint to see a company just take a light touch to an issue like this and either say, yeah, we looked at it, or we had a couple of people inquire, we did a couple of interviews, and we don't think there's an issue, when ultimately there is likely to be an issue and you just need to put that to rest and to have the fact patterns to effectively be able to convey that to the interested parties. And as you indicated, the stakeholders, of which there are many in this particular instance.
Yeah, and I think from a stakeholder standpoint, I mean, you mentioned attorneys, but typically in an investigation of this nature, you're probably going to bring in forensic accountants, maybe internal audit to help sort through this, compliance and others, and including your, you know, Office of General Counsel and External Counsel. So I think that's a really important aspect. And do you typically find, Didier, that the committee of the board that handles these, because they're all required to be independent as public companies, is the audit committee?
Yes. Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. And you know, the benefit of the audit committee is twofold. One is likely external experience in the field of accounting, which I think is a very nuanced element of the things that you need to look in terms of the fact patterns and the records associated with a proper investigation. And then two, it's likely that the audit committee members are probably or have been on other boards which have experienced similar set of circumstances and therefore are pretty well educated most of the time in terms of what the obligations are from their perspective, but as well as all the stakeholders, including DOJ, the SEC, if you're a registrant. I will say for those board members that aren't publicly in public companies, there is a way for Department of Justice to get involved in these investigations, even with private companies, through legal interpretation of aiding and abetting. So just because you're not public, it doesn't mean that you're precluded from being investigated. And then there's a books and records element that the SEC always follows up. And so that means that there's some very nuanced analysis that needs to take place in the investigative process that includes forensically sound acquisition of information and fact patterns, but also the accounting record.
So you mentioned earlier, and this will be my last question for you, but you mentioned earlier that typically the board gets notified probably through activities of whistleblowing or elevation. Is it at this juncture in the board's purview to start asking more direct questions of management, that this is something that we would want to know immediately if this comes to your attention? Because that's the two-way communication between board and management that, you know, I'm thinking about.
Yeah, from a board's perspective, Amy, I think you're absolutely correct. This is one of the things that falls by the wayside a lot of the time and never reaches the board. I'll even add to that, because when you're looking at your whistleblower program, depending on how it's constructed and what the governance is around that, there might be certain issues that are considered to be escalated only to, let's say, HR or to legal or to compliance, and or maybe to your transaction monitoring and your KYC if you're more in the financial services oriented industry. And the question is there actually a connection point within those silos within the organization that allows the proper escalation within the organization to then be escalated up to the board? And often is the case that you'll get an issue that has been raised within the whistleblower construct, but not properly escalated. And there's two effects to that. One is it doesn't get dealt with and doesn't go up to the board. The other is whoever the whistleblower is becomes a disgruntled whistleblower and might go to the outside resources to then escalate the allegations with lawyers and with regulators. And so that becomes even more complex to deal with. So the board should absolutely ask to be kept apprised of anything that percolates up that might even be closely relevant to this issue.
Now, this has been great. Thank you so much. I've learned a lot, and I hope our audience has too. So I really thank you for your comments and your perspective here.
Thank you so much, Amy. I really appreciate it.
All right. Well, thank you to our audience, and please stay tuned for more BDO in the Boardroom.
Thank you for listening to BDO in the Boardroom. If you like the show, be sure to rate, review, and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. If you have any questions about what we discussed today, reach out to us via BDO.com, where you can also access the resources cited in this episode and learn more about the BDO Center for Corporate Governance. The views expressed by our guests do not necessarily reflect the views of BDO.